Είστε παρέα με το SBS Ελληνικά. Βρείτε περισσότερες ενδιαφέρουσες ιστορίες στο sbs.com.au/Greek.
Professor, who is Erdogan and which were some of the most defining moments in his personal as well as political life?
Well, so Recep Tayyip Erdogan is a long-time politician, very much a political veteran now in Turkey, and he emerged from the Islamist camp known as Milli Görüş, with the National View, led by Necmettin Erbakan. And he was originally elected as mayor of Istanbul in 1994, and then he would go on, as you know, to become the leader of the Justice and Development Party, where he'd be elected as the prime minister. That was in 2002. And in 2014, he would go on to become president, changing the presidential role from a ceremonial role to a sort of more engaged political role. And of course, subsequent to that, with referendums, he's become sort of leader-in-chief now with a supreme sort of role in terms of the presidency giving it enlarged powers. With regards to some of the defining moments, I would think that one of the key ones would be the 1997 soft coup that happened against Necmettin Erbakan and his party when they were in power, where the military put an ultimatum to them, I think with around 18 or so demands. And rather than cede to the demands of the military, he resigned his position. So I think he learned a lot from that in terms of the unyielding position, if you like, of Erbakan, who was his sort of political guide, mentor, if you like. And so he saw that perhaps he needed to have a much more flexible disposition. So following that, another key moment would also, I think, be the fact that he was jailed in 1998 whilst mayor for reciting a poem which referred to the fact that mosques were like barracks. So he was picked up for inciting religious hatred. So again, there's this issue of persecution. So I think these sorts of things would never leave him. And so what happened was he, moving forward, he actually split off from Erbakan's movement, established the Justice and Development Party, and took up a much more sort of progressive position, I think, because he learned that you can't sort of be recalcitrant, if you like. And so they took a much more open stance, whereas Erbakan and his party were anti-Western and anti-EU. The Justice and Development Party was much more progressive, wanting to open up, and was obviously pro-EU. So I think he learned to be more flexible and learned to talk a much more sort of practical, if you like, pragmatic outlook, if you like. And that was learned from his formative training with Erbakan and watching those events, of course, because with the 1997 closure, that was just one of many, many party closures. Of course, the previous iterations in the 70s were both closed down as well. So that would also be part of that, I guess, that the historical context, if you like, behind his training and thinking.
In terms of his character, some analysts have branded him as volatile, irate, and exhibiting quite often conflicting views. Now, could this be a strategy, or is that pretty much his personality? What is your assessment?
Certainly, I think that he can be bombastic in terms of, you know, being quite willing to sort of play the populist card and try and whip up the crowd, for sure. He's definitely a populist, but at the same time, I would say that he's very much, I would think, a very cunning and canny political operator. And as I said before, very much, I think, within that pragmatic mould, is that he will do what he thinks is necessary at the time. So I think he's a very shrewd political operator. So I don't think he's unthinking in terms of how he goes about his political, the paths that he takes. A good example perhaps would be, for example, they were very much involved in the Kurdish peace process from 2011 with the secret peace talks with the Kurds. And then when the peace process didn't pan out the way that they wanted in 2015, there was no hesitation, I think, for really sort of instrumentalizing the Kurdish issue around issues of security and order, and using that as part of the discourse for the reset elections and so on, saying that the Justice and Development Party are the only ones that can provide order. So I think he's very much will roll with the events, and we'll see what's the most productive line to go down.
Yeah.
So I think he's a very canny political operator.
Yeah, because like you say, it was a complete 180 on that issue, his stance.
Absolutely. So it was a complete turnaround, if you like, from trying to resolve the Kurdish issue to what was an escalation and an instrumentalization and securitization of the Kurdish situation. So again, I think very much a very pragmatic political operator that will do what he feels is necessary in order to get the desired result.
Is Erdogan's grip in power slipping, and are there any major contenders out there?
I would certainly say that perhaps some of the shine has come off Erdogan and the Justice and Development Party. They did have that dip in the votes with the 2015 election where they lost 8% and they had to regain it through that reset elections and that, again, order and security line. And they've had to form an alliance, obviously, with the Nationalist Party led by Devlet Bahçeli in order now to get over the line. So there certainly has been some loss of ground in terms of electoral support. However, that said, the new contenders that have come along in Babacan and Davutoğlu, who are former members, of course, of the Justice and Development Party, it's very early days and it's very hard to say that they are going to necessarily greatly change the landscape. Initial reporting suggests there's very little support in terms of votes, maybe in the single digits for each candidate. So it's really going to be, I think, a watch this space and see how it unfolds. Davutoğlu, I think, has a more uphill battle in the sense that he is seen as having presided over the disastrous foreign policy, so the zero problems with friends in the neighbourhood, and we saw how that unfolded in relation to Syria and, of course, Egypt with following supporting the Muslim Brotherhood and so forth. So he's got more of an uphill battle in terms of his brand, whereas Babacan is perhaps seen as more likely to have more impact in the sense that he presided over a very good economic growth period when he was with the Justice and Development Party. So given the economic situation and how things are certainly on the slide at the moment with the lira falling against the US dollar and whether or not Erdogan can sort of manufacture some kind of recovery, we'll have to see. But I think Babacan might be the one that can make more inroads in that regard. But at this stage, I think we'd have to say watch this space because, as I said, Erdogan is a very canny political operator, and I don't think we should be writing any eulogies at this stage.
Now, by many accounts, Erdogan aspires to become one of the greatest Turkish leaders, if not the greatest Turkish leader, and somewhat trying to restore the power and influence of the Ottoman Empire in modern-day Turkey. How do you think history will judge him?
Well, that's a difficult question. I'm not one to really try and look into the crystal ball and sort of give a future reading, if you like. However, what I can say is that probably I wouldn't frame it in typical terms like the neo-Ottoman. So a lot of the discourses around that he's tried to sort of reestablish a neo-Ottoman kind of situation. I would say that definitely he had grand aspirations for the region in terms of becoming a regional leader, certainly in terms of putting his support behind the Muslim Brotherhood. He certainly wanted to become or take a shot at becoming a regional leader, particularly for the Muslim world. And a good example of that also is, for example, pushing for action on the Rohingya issue with the Organization of Islamic Cooperation in recent years and trying to jostle with Saudi Arabia to take that sort of self-appointed, if you like, leader of the Muslim world. So certainly that he wanted to have that prestige. In terms of how history will judge, again, coming back to the previous point, is I think that we still have to watch that space because, as I say, winners are the ones that write history. So we're going to have to wait and see whether or not actually the opposition parties can make any inroads because they have both intimated that they are trying to re-engage the European Union accession process and that they do want to revert to a parliamentary system. So it's whether or not those things come to pass, and I think they will have a significant impact if they do in terms of how we'll view this particular period in time.
Θέλετε να ακούσετε περισσότερες ιστορίες σαν και αυτήν? Ακούστε στο Apple Podcast, στο Google Podcast, στο Spotify ή οπουδήποτε ακούτε podcast.